Hello, welcome to the Investors Chronicle Alpha podcast. I'm James Norrington, Investors Chronicle Alpha. You'll notice John Heumann's away this week. He's actually off working on a very exciting project. The Investors Chronicle is relaunching our website and the magazine, so that's keeping John very busy. But we still have the other half of the dynamic duo on the podcast. Phil Oakley is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Very good, thank you, James.
Excellent. Good to see you. It's been a while. Nice to see you keeping well. So there's a lot to talk about though this week. Markets have been fairly flat, but this is a chance perhaps to take a step back and think about the state of the economy where there hasn't been that much good news. We've seen the UK public borrowing. The government spent 260 billion more than it brought in the last 6 months. And a survey from the Office of National Statistics, 14% of companies they spoke to think that there's a chance that they could go bust. Doesn't look good for the UK economy, Phil, at the moment.
No. You know, I think what's been going on, and it's a theme not just with the economy, but also with, the companies that are in the economy, is that what you tend to find is that a downturn finds a lot of things out. You know, it's the classic sort of, you find out who's been swimming naked when the tide goes out. And, I've held the view for a long time that, the UK is a very fragile economy. It doesn't produce enough. It consumes too much. It's reliant too much on house prices and credit. And the government finances have been a mess since the financial crisis. Now they keep on spending more than they take in taxes. And we're not really, really well prepared for something like this. And if you look at the relative state of the UK economy, it has taken a much bigger hit, being predominantly a service economy, to sort of more mainstream manufacturing economies such as Germany, China. The United States has had a lot smaller hit, and we are really a bit of an outlier here, and it's not a good picture, no.
One of the things that that you've always highlighted is that investors really should have a look at what's happening with the pound. I mean, at the moment, next week we'll have more to talk about when it comes to Brexit. But the pound has been sort of fairly sanguine in the run up to next week. It's about $1.33, €1.12 at the moment. Gilt yields are up slightly at 0.3%. These are things to watch. And what are the risks? Because with the borrowing and the weakness of the UK economy, a run on the pound is something that is a real possibility.
Yeah, I think there are two things that investors need to bear in mind is that. It seems that the bond market has been tamed. You know, if you have a central bank that can print money and can mop up the borrowing that governments take on when they spend more than they take in, then you can keep a lid on gilt yields, on market interest rates. Now, the problem with that is that if that becomes too much, and you are printing up a lot of currency, then the risk is that you damage the value of the currency that you're printing up, so the pound. So you create more pounds, you destroy the value of the pound, the purchasing power of the pound. The thing about currencies is that they are relative. And when you've got lots of countries trying to do the same thing, America being the obvious one, then, the relative value between, say, the pound and the dollar may not move as much. But sterling, is certainly not a strong currency. It doesn't really have a lot going for it at the moment. It has rallied a bit, primarily on dollar weakness and some uncertainties there. And, we mentioned the B word at the start, possibility that some sort of trade deal is done, and that leads to some sort of relief rally in the value of the pound, which is possible. But long term, I'm quite bearish on the pound. I think that the strength of the UK economy, its continued tendency to suck in imports rather than produce its own stuff, is not good for the long term value of the pound.
Well, there'll be a lot more to talk about on this next week with as the Brexit negotiations come to a head. But moving to more generally to the point of value and what it means to the stock market. We saw with the good vaccine news last week's rally, there's the so-called rotation into value as an investing style by investors, you know, around the world. And that potentially, it sort of seems to fly in the face of a few secular factors which go against value investing. I mean, if I could just list a couple, there's the idea that big tech companies are now permanent monopolies. There's just the fact that with interest rates so low, the discount rate for earnings out in the future is lower, so that favors long-term growth companies. And then, you know, as we're seeing environmental, social, governance, ESG, sustainability investing, a lot of value investments, which were predicated on measures like price to book, a lot of the assets are stranded by the secular changes that's going on in the economy. So there seems to be quite a lot going against value investing. And I know that you're very much still a growth and quality man for the long run.
You know, I've banged on about the price of quality growth stocks, evaluation of quality growth stocks for the last 2 to 3 years now. And I think they are expensive and have become more expensive, but they do have, you know, two things going for them in that they are very robust businesses with strong competitive positions, and they have the ability to grow. And investors like them because they don't tend to blow up. And one of the biggest risks that you run as an investor is, you know, you come in one morning and you open up your screen or whatever, and you find that you've got a company that's had a profit warning and its shares are down 25%. Now, that kind of damage to a stock and to, you know, more than a few stocks in your portfolio is very difficult to recover from. And it's very difficult if you're running a long-term portfolio with a long time horizon and you're looking to compound the value of that. Setbacks like that can throw your whole plan, your whole investment portfolio and what it's trying to achieve under a bus. And this is the risk that you have with so-called value stocks, is that you have companies that are cheap or look statistically cheap or cheap on, you know, earnings measures, cash flow measures, but usually the market doesn't give a free lunch. The only time the market really gives a free lunch is like something like March or 2008, 2009, 2003 maybe, when you just get a general market sell-off and good quality businesses can be bought for reasonable prices. In other times, low valuations are usually correlated with higher business risk. So it's a case of saying, look, this is cheap, but it needs to be cheap to compensate for the risk. And the risk is that the business behind the shares has an issue with it, which means that it may not be as reliable as you want it to be.
So, I mean, you've made some changes to the Fantasy SIP. Again, you're sort of moving further away from this is the portfolio that you run in your weekly alpha reports. You're trying to move away from UK companies for some of the reasons that we've discussed with general bearish feeling on the UK. But you've added another quality US company to the Fantasy SIP, Procter & Gamble, for that reason. Even though, you know, in the past you've said that you're very bullish about own branded products, and obviously P&G is a big brand consumer staples company.
Yeah, I am still long-term bull of private label. But I think, you know, if I look at the way that, you know, the whole thing about this Fantasy SIP, which is part of the newsletter, is just a sort of live weekly process of a private investor running a portfolio that isn't trying to shoot the lights out, but is just trying to sort of quietly sort of grow, you know, a bit more than inflation without a lot of ups and downs. And so one of the key themes of the stocks that are in it are shares that are very, very steady. So they're highly profitable businesses, but they maintain a very steady business performance throughout economic cycles. So I spend a lot of time looking at how businesses perform in recessions, which means that this year, 2020, is actually an incredibly valuable year for investors, because they will learn so much about companies, because companies tend to tell you a lot more when things are going badly, and you learn bits about the business that you wouldn't learn about when perhaps things are going well and they cover up certain risks. But P&G has done a lot of good work in turning itself around. There's nothing undiscovered about it. You know, it's a massive company. But what it's been doing is ditching a lot of tired brands. It's got rid of, you know, dozens and dozens of brands, and is focusing its energy behind core brands, which is a theme that you've seen a lot in a lot of consumer goods stocks. The other thing that I like about it, it's something that I've had on the sort of watch list for the last 6 months, is that it's spending a lot more time now in product development, partnering with young businesses, entrepreneurs who are developing new products, almost as like a sort of laboratory where it's developing new products, which sort of niche new markets to go into. That, too, I think, is something that will make the business more agile. But then you just can't get away from the fact that, you know, it is a business that is very predictable, has some fantastic consumer brands, high top-end consumer brands that consumers put in their trolleys every week. And it's a fantastically profitable, cash-generative business that can be bought, you know, at quite a reasonable valuation. You know, it's like 4.5% free cash flow yield, you know, when interest rates are zero. It's a kind of sort of low volatility investment that I would be quite happy just to tuck away, and that's the main reason why it's gone in. And you know, a lot of the stuff that is, you know, the tech end and healthcare businesses and the stuff that everyone's flocked to over the last 2-3 years is now looking really expensive, and I just think that there's a bit more of a sort of relative opportunity. You haven't got the growth, but I think, you know, you're always trying to play the trade-off. Growth is more important than valuation. That's one of the key lessons I think that we've learned as investors, or hopefully some of us have learned later than others, including me. But that's one of the key lessons, is that growth is what develops. But there can be a night, you know, it's about getting the balance right. And I think Procter & Gamble's got quite a nice balance there now.
So it's interesting with the balance with growth and value. So I think the tech stocks on a Schiller PE, so cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, that's something like 94 times the top five stocks in America, the sort of the bastions of growth. But the Chinese companies, so the Tencents and the Alibabas, are on about 30 times their core business. And I'm just, we've spoken about internationalizing the fantasy SIP. Is there? Are you interested at all in the ADRs or even the Hong Kong listings of companies like that?
Not really, not really. I'm always a little bit. I'm sort of, you know, UK, America. I think there's scope for maybe a couple of European stocks. I'm not against. You know, I think, you know, these companies like Tencent and Alibaba are, you know, fabulous businesses. They have tremendous amounts of power in their markets. I'm just a little bit wary of them. I'm just a little bit wary of that area of the market, that geography. And I think, you know, I feel happier owning Amazon than Alibaba. And in terms of like the gaming exposure, which is obviously you get through something like Tencent. I'm playing that through Frontier Developments, which is a, you know, an AIM listed smaller UK stock, which actually Tencent has a holding in that. So the answer to your question is no, but it's a fair point, and you know, nothing is out of consideration. I just staying something which is more easier for a private investor to sort of do, and I'm sort of sticking to sort of UK, US, European stocks where I can.
So moving to a company that you do hold in the quality shares and the fancy SIP, Croda, it's a different type of dilemma for a quality investor. It's a company that you've written about in the past and described as a quality trap. It's recently paid quite a lot of money, if you think, for a company called Iberchem, which is a Spanish private equity owned business, which you highlight as a red flag, buying off of PE guys who know how to get a good deal. And this is a company which is perfume and fragrance products and it has a good foothold in emerging markets. So I looked at this, your report. Now I pulled out sort of three or four bullet points. The fact that it's natural ingredients that a lot of what Croda, also Croda's main business is agricultural products, and it's a lot of natural ingredients, which for me is rather than oil based stuff. So for an ESG perspective going forward, that's got to be a bull point for the company. And this acquisition gives it more clout in emerging markets, and it's also just got a contract with Pfizer to help with ingredients for the vaccine. So there are a few bull points. So you're point in the past has been you've been skeptical about the growth prospects for Croda. So I just wanted to it was an interesting company. I just wanted to you to tell us a bit more about it.
I think Croda is a great business. It fits a lot of criteria that I like. You know, it's a sort of specialist niche business, and it's an enabler. So it's a problem solver and an enabler for its customers. So it puts ingredients into things like skin creams, beauty products. It does things like crop protection products, and does a lot of ingredients that go into things like vaccines, which is obviously a big topic at the moment. It's a very clever business. It's got some very clever products that are patented, have good positions with their customers, and are very profitable. And it also has a very good culture. I like companies that have direct selling models. So they cut out distributors, they cut out middlemen, and they sell directly to their customers, and they get to know their customers better than if they outsource it to a distributor. You can get some companies that work with distributors and customers and do quite well. But generally speaking, I like this kind of direct selling model. So there's a lot to like about Croda in terms of how its business is put together and what it does. The key issue, I think, the key problem that this company has had in the last sort of couple of years is the ability just to grow from what it has, what is known as organic growth. And it's been a real problem. And, you can have great businesses that are highly profitable, but you need, the ideal business is a highly profitable business that does things that not many other companies can. It's on a good valuation and it can grow. Now, finding all three in these markets is very, very difficult. Croda is a great business that's highly valued, but it hasn't been growing much. But the shares have still done quite well because, people have flocked to this kind of investment in recent years because they feel safe with it. And I think what concerns me is that the business that they're buying, Iberchem, looks a great fit. It ticks a lot of boxes. It takes them into new product markets, so it complements their personal care business, but it moves them into home care. So things like, fragrances that might go in washing powders, dishwasher tablets, fabric care, and it takes them into food and drink flavorings. And also that it shifts the geographic footprint. 85% of the sales of this business are in emerging markets.
Does that solve the growth problem, the shift into EM?
A bit. They're buying a business which has a very good historic track record of growth. It's a business that has grown its sales by 15% a year compound for the last decade. Now let's see if that continues. I am deeply suspicious and cynical about private equity, perhaps overly so, because I've seen so many instances of of them getting out. They have a knack of getting out while the going's good at a top valuation and leaving nothing on the table. And I'm not really a fan, and I don't like to see companies buying off private equity, because private equity usually legs businesses over, in my opinion. And if you look at the price that Croda has paid for this business, yeah, it looks a great business on paper. And of course, you know, they say, oh, well, it enhances earnings per share. Well, when you live in a world where interest rates are zero, you don't need to get much of a return on investment to enhance earnings per share. The key thing that investors should look for when they're appraising a company that's making an acquisition is the return on investment. So you look at the profit that they acquire versus the price that they've paid for the business. So at the moment, Croda is paying 20 times EBITDA. So, you know, obviously EBITDA isn't even a proper measure of profit. But what it's saying is that, I mean, that's a punchy multiple. Although, you know, not too dissimilar from the stock market valuation of Croda itself, actually. But that's by the by. And I think the thing for me that I find a little bit concerning is that Croda say that it's going to take them 5 years for the return on this business to beat what's known as their cost of capital. And their cost of capital will probably be something around 8%, or before tax, probably 10%. So they're paying, you know, 750 or 60 million, something like that. It's something between 730 and 760, I can't remember. And they're getting 35, 36 million of EBITDA. Well, they need to be getting about 75 million of operating profit. So EBITDA has got to be higher than that. So you're looking at, you know, a business that's going to have to double its operating profit in the next 5 years to make an acceptable return on investment. And that's where the risk comes for shareholders in any company that makes an acquisition like this. And it's no different from you and I, you know, the discussion we were having 15 minutes ago about the price of quality growth shares. You can pay a high price for quality growth share, and the share price can still get more expensive. The problem is when you buy a business, you fly or die by the business performance. There is no magic stock market that can get you out of a hole. You know, you have to get the business to perform well. Now, if this business performs like it has done, then Croda may make an acceptable return. And I suppose, you know, maybe I'm being a little bit too pessimistic, but I think given what the company's got with its organic growth, and it's maybe looking to acquisitions to grow instead, and that's fine as long as you pay the right price for them. And this looks like the wrong price to me.
Okay, so in terms of buying and selling at the right and wrong price, it has been a challenge. I think if you have a cognitive bias tick, Phil, it may be, I think you said that one of the things you've learned over the last year has been to not focus too much on valuation. Growth is all important. Halmer, a company that you've sold out of, and I think you said that you regretted selling out of it in this week, and also a company, I mean, which you've written about before, the Games Workshop, which you sold out of and that has subsequently bought back in at. What do you think you've learned from these companies in your portfolio management and the way that you're managing the UK quality shares and the Fancy Sip going forward?
Yeah, I've learned a lot. And I think we've all learned a lot. And I think that COVID and the lockdowns has exposed things about businesses that perhaps people like me and lots of other investors didn't expect. And they've exposed vulnerabilities. I mean, you can say that it's an extreme one-off event that's not likely to happen, but I think it's you know, it's shown frailties. So I think, you know, I've had businesses in the portfolio which, you know, have proven to be weaker or not as strong as I expected. The main lesson that I learn, and I suppose continue to learn, is that I think don't sell a business that's doing well and is growing just because it's overvalued. And that was a mistake I made with Games Workshop. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, Games Workshop, you know, is a very difficult business to predict. It depends on very much on the release schedule of new games, new products. It just happens to be in a great spot at the moment where there's a tailwind behind this business, and it's been very well managed. You also have a lot of operational gearing in the business, which gears to the upside and the downside. And I think there's a lot of good things going on at Games Workshop. The more I've looked at it, the more I like it. I think the growth there is a lot more sustainable than perhaps I thought it was. There's still a visibility issue, but at the moment, the wind is blowing in the right direction, and the surprises are likely to be good. It won't always be that way. Halma is slightly different. Halma is a very good business. Again, it's one of these niche problem solver. It gets into, you know, critical areas of the economy, things like safety, the environment, medical type businesses, where there's good long-term structural demand. And it's almost run like an investment company, really. They buy companies and they let the management just get on with it. And they've been very good at buying businesses that have got reasonable rates of organic growth, and they make good acquisitions and they make good returns on investment from those acquisitions. I think Halma's still on, you know, it's still on about 45 times earnings. And, you know, even with an earnings recovery, it comes down to about 37 times earnings. And a lot of the underlying growth is coming from acquisition. You'll get some earnings recovery in the next couple of years. But I think I have less, even though the shares have performed quite well this year, I have less regret about Halma than I did about Games Workshop. I think the quality of growth at Games Workshop is better than it is at Halma, because it's coming from existing assets at Games Workshop. And I think you should always prefer businesses that can grow from what they already have rather than buying growth. That's not to say that Halma isn't a really good business. It is. I just think its share price has got a little bit out of touch with the fundamentals behind it. I certainly wouldn't be in a rush to buy it back.
Okay, great. And just to wrap up, really, as we said, we're not going to talk too much about Brexit this week because we'll have more to talk about next week. But as a portfolio manager, you've moved the portfolio. As you said in the report, you're happier with the portfolios now than you were at the start of the year. How confidently do you feel placed that, you know, that you can ride out whatever's going to happen?
I have no idea. The truth, I think economies are important. You know, people say that stock markets aren't the economy, and that is true. But company profits are geared to the economy, and company profits determine share prices, at least over the long run. We can't spend a lot of time worrying about the economy too much. I think you have to focus. I think you have to focus on individual businesses, the markets that they're in, the products that they sell, and how well positioned they are to do that. That does require some consideration of the economies that they operate in. And obviously, if you've got a lot of people out of work who haven't got money in their pockets, they're going to be buying less of what some companies make. So you've got to bear that in mind. But you know, what will be, you know, companies can adapt, humans can adapt. And I think that you should never underestimate the ability of businesses and humans to, yes, take a setback, but actually come back better from it. And I think, you know, if I look at the sort of companies I prefer, you know, mainly overseas earners, overseas shares or UK listed shares with overseas earners, yes, there is a risk that if we get a rally in the pound, that you will get some kind of hit. But there's not really a lot I can do about it. If I have my belief in the companies that I look for, that's something that I have to accept. And I think that, you know, the alternative is to buy UK companies with UK earnings streams, which take away that currency risk. And I don't really like a lot of what I see in the UK market for the style of investing that I like, which is sort of hopefully trying to hang on to them for, you know, more than 5 minutes. I think the UK market is very interesting. I think there are shares in the UK stock market that look seriously undervalued. And, you know, we've seen a bit of a bounce from the vaccine, and it wouldn't surprise me. Certain shares, you know, travel-related shares could go on to have another big bounce if we, you know, get out the other side of this virus. I can see a bounce back. Whether that is, you know, whether that leads makes them sustainable growth stocks, I'm not so sure.
Okay, well, thanks. Well, there'll certainly be plenty to talk about in the weeks ahead as hopefully we do get some good news and some companies do re-rate, but possibly it's going to be, well, I think a lot of people know it's going to be a hard winter for the UK. But anyway, thank you very much, Phil, for your time this morning, and chat to you again soon. And for listeners, you can read more of Phil's insights in his Alpha report, which will be out later on Friday today. Thanks very much.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.